We are going to be preaching from the Bible this morning, so let's get into it. We preach from the Bible every week here at Grace Church, and if you have a Bible, why don't you grab it out? We'll get there in a few minutes. If you don't have a Bible, then you can just put your hand in the air, and someone will bring one to you. Someone is scuttering across. If anyone needs one, just put your hand up. And if you don't own it, you can take it home. That's a gift from us to you. Please do, you know, keep it, write your name in it, do what you want, read it. But we're going to be starting a new mini-series this morning, which I'll tell you a bit about in a moment as well. I just want to start really by talking about birthday presents for a minute. So everyone has their own preferred way of giving birthday presents and choosing what to get, as in to give someone else a birthday present, choosing what to get them. Everyone's got their own method, haven't they? Some people like to be given a list so they know exactly, you know, not to stray from the list. They know that they're going to be getting something the other person will definitely put to use and use. Some go one further and just like to give a voucher, don't they, or cash. And so people know exactly they're definitely going to make the most of this money. Some people hate the ideas of that, don't they, and just like to try and be creative and get something, which obviously, you know, it's fun in a way, but then you've got the gamble that they don't actually want it when you give it to them. I'm not really sure. I don't know where you lie. I'm not sure where I lie. I kind of like to be creative in getting presents for people, but I'm not very good at it, so I tend to just disappoint them when I try and be creative. I'm better off when I stick to the list. One thing that everyone wants is we want the person receiving the present that we're giving a present to, we want them to enjoy the present, don't we? We want them to love the present, and ideally to put it to use regularly and make the most of it. We love to give presents that are used a lot, don't we? But certainly that is much more the case when we are giving something to someone to kind of look after for a limited period of time. So when it kind of belongs to us, but we're giving it to them to look after it. Like if someone's house-sitting for you, something like that, for example. If you ask them to look after your dog or something like that, you certainly generally would be happy for them to kind of enjoy it and, you know, make the most of the house and take the dog for a walk and go on places you like to go to. But at the same time, it's important to us that they look after the stuff, isn't it? And that they have kind of a degree of seriousness about the role of looking after it, to understand they're looking after it on our behalf. It doesn't belong to them. And this morning, as I say, we're starting our three-part series that we have simply named Jesus on Giving, where we're going to be looking at three things that Jesus said on the subject of money and giving. Now, first, money is by no means kind of the only thing we talk about here at Grace Church. But at the same time, it's not a no-go area either. It's not like a taboo topic. In the autumn last year, we preached on giving as a special one-off gift. And the church responded in, you know, a remarkable way, actually. It was really an amazing level of faith that we saw. And it was an amazing time. And over the next 3 weeks, we're going to be talking more about our regular giving, our ongoing giving, the general stewardship of everything we have. And this, as regular giving, I actually haven't talked on this since 2015, so it's kind of overdue in that way. Because at the end of the day, it is good to preach about money and what we should do with it, because the Bible teaches about it quite a lot. And we preach the Bible, we teach the Bible here, and the Bible talks about it because of the key role that it plays in our relationship with God. And so that's why it's important. Through this mini-series, we're going to be asking everyone in Grace Church to take a step of faith when it comes to their giving. And so you might have noticed the little pages in the What's On sheets this week. So feel free to kind of, you know, have a little look at that now if you want to. I'll explain more later about, you know, what we're going to do with them. But have a look. They're just for your personal reflection. So we're not collecting these in at the end or anything like that. They're just for your reflection. Feel free to look at them. They're for you to think over, to prayerfully consider what you could do to take a faith step. But I'll explain more later. Today I'm talking broadly about our general stewardship of all our stuff, true stewardship. I'm going to be talking about stewardship. So before I use the word kind of too many times without explaining what I mean, let's just put a quick definition up so we all know what we're talking about. Stewardship, really, it's just how we handle the resources that God has entrusted to us. And the reason I was talking about birthday presents and house-sitting is because stewardship of our stuff the resources that, God has entrusted to us, it's more like house sitting than receiving birthday presents. It's not like God has given you, you know, a birthday present or lots, as it may be, and it's just he's just really hoping that you enjoy it and that you look after it well. But hey, you know, if you don't, then it's yours. It's a gift to you. You can do what you want with it. It's not up for me. That's how we do with birthday presents, and it's not really like that. It's more like God has given you some stuff, a house or a dog or whatever it is, to look after. And sure, you know, make the most of it, use it well, but look after it. And remember, it doesn't ultimately belong to you. So what is the stuff? What are we talking about? What are the resources that God has entrusted to us? What has God given to us to steward? So you're going to click through a bunch of things. Firstly, money. Kind of obvious. These are things that God has given to us. These are gifts from God. Also, possessions. You know, all of our stuff, whatever you have, your iPhone or your car, your clothes, etc. Anything you own is something God has given to you to steward. Your house is kind of, you know, a possession, but it's also slightly different, isn't it? How you steward it and what you do with it in your house. Your time. Each one of us has been given 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, 366 every 4 years, and we've all got the same amount of time that God has given to us to steward, to make the most of. And your skills and your gifts, even. Your abilities, the stuff that you are good at, God has made you good at those things. Your job is a gift from God to you. It's for you to steward. Your body as well. What you do with your body, what you put in it, where you go with it, you know, what you do with your body is a gift from God for you to steward. Your family as well, your marriage maybe, your children. Are for you. God has entrusted these things to you to steward well. Your church, what about that one? Certainly is the case for elders. You know, in the Bible, the word is stewards is used for elders and overseers. So it's kind of certainly for elders, but I think it's the case for everyone actually. And you're a member of a church. God has given you a position of responsibility and entrusted that to you. Your words, things you say. What comes out of your mouth, the way you say things, what you say, your spiritual life. I mean, it's certainly up there, isn't it? What you do in your spiritual life. And I've got one more, the earth or environment, which I put in brackets because it's kind of a, you know, theological debate really over whether we are given that to steward or to have dominion over. But that is another preach for another day. But that, it's kind of up there. So God has entrusted a lot of resources to us. Let's get to the Bible, see what it has to say. Specifically in this series, as I say, we're going to be looking at what Jesus says. And we're going to be in Luke 16 this morning. Luke chapter 16, so go ahead, turn there. It's in the New Testament, one of the early books in the New Testament. Luke chapter 16, going to be reading from verse 1. It's known as the parable of the shrewd manager. And it's slightly surprising sometimes when you read it through. You think, oh, that's not what I expected it to say. You might pick that up as we read it, but I'll read it through and then I'll explain it. What's going to happen this morning, I'll read through and we'll talk about what it's saying, and then we'll kind of summarize what it's saying, and then we'll look at how we apply that, and we're going to apply it specifically in the area of money, and I'll explain that later again, and then we'll see kind of what is our motivation in that. So let's read Luke 16. Verse 1, Jesus told his disciples, there was a rich man whose manager was accused of wasting his possessions. So he called him in and asked him, what is this I hear about you? Give an account of your management, because you cannot be manager any longer. The manager said to himself, what shall I do now? My master is taking away my job. I'm not strong enough to dig and I'm ashamed to beg. I know what I'll do, so that when I lose my job here, people will welcome me into their houses. So he called in each one of his master's debtors. He asked the first, how much do you owe my master? 3,000 litres of olive oil, he replied. The manager told him, take your bill, sit down quickly and make it 1,500. Then he asked the second, and how much do you owe? 30 tons of wheat, he replied. He told him, take your bill, make it 24. The master commended the dishonest manager, which is surprising, because he had acted shrewdly. For the people of this world are more shrewd in dealing with their own kind than are the people of the light. I tell you, use worldly wealth to gain friends for yourselves, so that when it is gone, you will be welcomed into eternal dwellings. Whoever can be trusted with very little can also be trusted with much. And whoever is dishonest with very little will also be dishonest with much. So if you have not been trustworthy in handling your worldly wealth, who will trust you with true riches? And if you have not been trustworthy with someone else's property, who will give you property of your own? No one can serve two masters. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or you will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. The Pharisees, who loved money, heard all this and were sneering at Jesus. He said to them, "You are the ones who justify yourselves in the eyes of others, but God knows your hearts. What people value highly is detestable in God's sight." So as I said, it's a potentially confusing and controversial parable. There's that weird bit where the master kind of commends the manager for his shrewdness and basically, you know, ripping someone off, which is, it seems odd to see that in the Bible. I think the best explanation of that, just quickly, is that the master is commending the manager for his shrewdness in kind of simply looking out for himself. You know, fair play, that's exactly what I would have done, kind of thing. You look out for yourself, got your own back. It isn't Jesus commending the manager for his behavior. It's not even Jesus commending the master for commending the manager for his behavior, if you track with that. Important thing to remember when reading any parable, actually, and a parable is just a story that Jesus told. Important thing is that they almost always have only one main point. So therefore, we don't want to get bogged down in the kind of the detail, as we are certainly at risk of doing when reading this parable. And in this instance, actually, Jesus does kind of explain the main point at the end. So I'm going to explain what Jesus is talking about here, and then we'll look at how to apply it into our lives. I think we can summarize what Jesus is saying through this parable as this. We are not masters of our stuff. We are not mastered by our stuff, but we are managers of our stuff. When I say stuff, I just mean the resources that God has entrusted to us. This is really what I was talking about before we read the passage. We're going to start with, we are not masters of our stuff. So this is the one I was talking about when before I started reading the passage. In the parable, we are represented by someone. You can either put yourself in the parable. We are represented by the manager, not the master or the owner. God is represented by the owner. And just as a master or an owner entrusts resources and responsibility to a manager, so has God entrusted resources and responsibility to us. But we do not ultimately own them. This is just so clear as you read the Bible. 1 Corinthians 4:7 says, "What do you have that you did not receive? And if you did receive it, why do you boast as though you did not? There is nothing we have that God did not give to us." This morning I was reading Psalm 24, I think it was as well, and it just says, "The earth is the Lord's and everything in it. It is all his." Another one as well, James 1:17, "Every good and perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of the heavenly lights." Some people like to try and deny this stuff, don't they? "I've worked hard to get where I've got to and have the money I have and go on the holidays that I go on. It's down to me and my blood and sweat and tears." But we just need to remember that everything we have is a resource that God has entrusted to us. Your job is a gift from God. Your skills that got you your job are a gift from God. Your drive that made you go and learn the skills that got you your job, your drive is a gift from God. The environment you grew up in that made it possible for you to go and get the training and teaching you need to get your job is a gift from God. Maybe you didn't have the most privileged upbringing, but we all live in England, don't we? We're all pretty privileged. And any one of us could have been born like 1,000 years ago into an Inuit tribe in the Arctic or something. We could have been born an Eskimo 1,000 years ago. And you know, you could have had the most driven attitude ever. You could have been the most confident and social person the world's ever known. You could have been just so intellectual, so smart, but you would have never been rich. You would just not have ever been rich. And you would have never even gone on holiday if you were born into that environment. We can convince ourselves that we've earned our money or whatever by our own, you know, excellencies. Those who have less because they haven't worked as hard as me. But all our skills are gifts. Everything you have is a gift from God. It's important to remember as well that God has actually given to us way more than just the things we have, the things he's entrusted to us. He has spared nothing from us. He's even given his own son for us. Romans 8:32. He who did not even spare his own son, but gave him up for us all, how will he not also, along with him, graciously give us all things? Without the gift of his son, you know, there'd be no meeting with God this morning. We would have no true joy or hope or peace. However much stuff we had, without his son, we would have had no real contentment. But out of his grace, he has not even spared giving his son so that we can know peace and joy and life. Just as his son, just as Jesus was a gift of grace from the Father, so is everything else that you have. It's not yours. It is all a gift of unmerited and undeserved grace from God. We are not masters of our stuff. We're not masters. Secondly, we're not mastered by our stuff. And I'll be pretty brief on this one because I think it's pretty simple, really. We are not masters of our resources, but we aren't mastered by them either. We're not controlled by the things we own. Jesus concludes the parable by saying this in verse 13, "No one can serve two masters. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or you will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money." Notice it's the word cannot. It's not you should not, but you just can't. You simply can't say that God is your Lord, God is your master, if money is too. The word used for serve as well, it's interesting to note, is actually kind of the same word that you would use for a slave. You know, and you can't be a slave to God or to money. And certainly slavery denotes exclusivity, doesn't it? You can't be a slave to more than one person. Most people do live for their money in at least some way. The decisions people make are based primarily on money, you know, and what's the financial input or output or whatever it is. And I'm not saying that, you know, don't ever make financial decisions. That would be silly and certainly not good stewardship. But is money the primary driver in most of your decisions? Have you become a slave to money? And also, it's not just money that we can be mastered by. You know, do you not have people around your house because you're worried about your carpet? Maybe you're kind of a slave to your possessions in some way. Do you have no time to serve in church, but, you know, you can get through a whole binge watch of a Netflix series in a week? Maybe you're not stewarding your time all that well. We can be slaves to all of our resources at the end of the day. We aren't masters of our stuff, but we're also not mastered by them if we're to be stewarding our resources well. But we are managers of our stuff. This is stewardship. Managing our things, handling the resources that God has entrusted to us. Everything you have is a gift from God for you to steward. We aren't masters of our resources, so we don't own them ultimately, and we aren't slaves to them either, but we have been given the responsibility of managing them on behalf of the owner. You know, just like a manager in a company. A manager is not the owner of the company's resources, you know, including the staff, but they have been given responsibility to manage it all well and make the most of the resources as well. So verse 10 of the passage we read says, "Whoever can be trusted with very little can also be trusted with much, and whoever is dishonest with very little will also be dishonest with much." Again, it's a pretty simple truth, isn't it? If you are faithful with little, you'll be faithful with lots. And if you can't be trusted with little, you can't be trusted with lots. It's a principle we use in parenting, isn't it? If you've got a child that, you know, has never crossed the road on their own, or something, never been out of the house on their own, never crossed the road on their own, and they come to you and say, "Hey, can I go to London and, you know, get on the train, go up to London for a day and come back on my own?" You don't say, "Yeah, go for it, you know, have a great day," do you? You start earlier on, you entrust them with maybe crossing a road on their own first, and you work up with a bit more responsibility. Same for the workplace. So in my old job, now I worked for a company called Simply Brands, and we supplied a lot of Halfords branded products in Halfords. So if you go into their stores, a lot of the stuff we would kind of source from the Far East on their behalf. Anyway, there was this buyer at Halfords who we dealt with a lot. Her name was Maria. Maria was lovely, but, you know, also a bit of a, I don't know, t- terrier. You know, you don't want to get on the wrong side of Maria. She, you know the kind of person I'm talking about, don't you? A buyer in Halfords is a pretty significant role that, you know, they've got a lot of responsibility. And Maria was one of those people who had just started her career in Halfords just, you know, stacking shelves in a store. And she just worked her way up gradually and gradually. She, you know, she bled Halfords. If you were cut her, she would bleed Halfords. And she was, she lived for it. She was good at her job. She was trustworthy as a Halfords employee in her position of significant responsibility. You know, what kind of employee do you think she would have been when she was stacking shelves? She would have been a trustworthy one as well. You know, it's just a simple principle. You don't get, you know, far in a business if you can't be trusted with the little stuff. The point is that your faithfulness, that your, you know, your trustworthiness in the management of the resources that God has entrusted to you as you manage the things, it's not dependent on what or how many resources God has entrusted to you. It is only dependent on whether you are faithful in it or not. So we can think, some people say, don't they, no, I'm one of these people who does really well with lots of responsibility. You know, I can lead people really well. I'm really good at managing others. I just don't cope that well with not much responsibility. I don't cope well being, you know, led by others. Well, Jesus says, yeah, that's just a load of rubbish. That is not true. If you are leadable, you'll be a better leader. If you're teachable, you'll be a better teacher. If you can't be trusted with little, then you can't be trusted with lots. It's the same as well with grumpy people. I don't know, have you ever heard people who say, oh, I hope I don't become grumpy when I get old? I've heard people say that. It doesn't work like that. People don't just suddenly become grumpy. If you're grumpy when you're young, you'll be grumpy when you're old. Grumpy people are grumpy, and not grumpy people are not grumpy. It's the same principle. It's also important to note that just like the manager in this parable who is accountable to the master, we also will be accountable to God for how well we have managed the resources he's entrusted to us. I'm not talking about your salvation. You know, I'm not talking about heaven and hell, whether you'll be saved and can enter into a relationship with God, because that depends entirely on whether you believe Jesus is Lord or not. Jesus has made a way for us to have relationship with God, and he has dealt with our sin and everything else that would hold us back from said relationship. All we need to do is believe in him, and we have life in him. But we will also be held to account for how well we have handled the resources that God's entrusted to us. For example, God has entrusted his church to elders, and elders will be held to account for how well they have stewarded God's church. Hebrews 13:17 says, have confidence in your leaders and submit to their authority, because they keep watch over you as those who must give an account. It's a sobering thought for me as an elder of Grace Church, but it's biblically, you know, it's pretty clear. And this passage is equally implicitly clear that will be the case for all of us when it comes to whatever God has entrusted to us. So we aren't masters of our stuff. We aren't mastered by our stuff, but we are managers of our things. God has given us that responsibility to manage anything that we have. So let's apply it then. How should we apply it to our lives? Well, we have all these things, don't we? As I say, we've got all these things that God has entrusted to us. But as I said, in order to apply it a bit more, I'm going to be talking exclusively, really, about how we manage our money. I'm going to be doing that for two reasons, focusing in on money. Firstly, money is the focus of this passage. So, you know, in preaching this Bible, I think that's a fair way to apply it, is to talk about money. That's what we're going to do. But secondly, also, I sincerely believe if we can focus on the area of money and get this right, or at least make some progress in this, then all of the other things will fall into place. Jesus said, where your treasure is, there your heart will also be. The best statement of your heart is your bank statement. And I'm preaching to our hearts this morning, just as Jesus was when he did it. And he was critical of the Pharisees because they didn't get it in their hearts. So what we're going to be doing is we're going to look at some signs that might indicate I could improve my stewardship of money or my management of money. Let me give you a couple of examples on other things so you know what I'm talking about. So not on money. Take time, for example. If you know that you have got a reputation for double booking yourself and therefore you are regularly cancelling on people or not turning up for things that you have committed to being at, then maybe you can improve the way that you manage your time. That would be a sign that you could improve. Or if you can't remember the last time you opened your Bible, then probably you could manage your time better too, and not to mention your spiritual life. Just to say, I'm talking mainly to Christians here, but these are not exclusive to Christians, actually. None of what I'm saying is. It's just wise and effective stewardship. One more example before we do money. If you let your diary fill up with work and, you know, whatever social things that you've got on and you want to do, and then give whatever time and energy you have left to your family, then maybe you're not stewarding your family well, and maybe you should prioritize them and think, put them in first and then see how it works. You've got to be real, obviously. But you see what I mean? Now, let's be clear before I kind of put some things up. We can all improve in the way that we steward our money and whatever God has entrusted to us. I'm confident you'll see yourself on this list somewhere. I'm certainly up there. I won't tell you where, but I'm up there. It's not about guilt. It's not even really about our sin. It's just to help us to see where we can improve. I'm certainly on there, like I say. So signs that might indicate I can improve my stewardship of money. One sign is that you're using payday loans. Hopefully no one is doing this. If you're using payday loans, come and talk to us. You know, where you've just got interest rates of 5,000% a day or whatever it is. Then if you're doing that and forced into a place of doing that, that would be a sign that you are not stewarding your money as well as you could be. They'll destroy you, payday loans. Another one, hiding bills or ignoring them. This might be an indication that you aren't stewarding your money well. I mean, no one likes getting a bill today through the door, but you kind of just get it and just hide that, pretend they never saw it, racing, you know, to get there before your spouse or something like that. Another one, fear of bills, which is kind of similar, not necessarily hiding or ignoring them, but you just having a fear of seeing them. So that you try and deal with them, not ignoring them, but they strike fear into you. Maybe that's you. Robbing Peter to pay Paul. Do you know what I mean with that? When you kind of got an account and you just move money from here to there and you know that actually that's just going to cause a problem over here when you've done that. And it's just a sign that you can improve your stewardship of money. I wonder if you've seen yourself yet. Like I say, I'll certainly get up there. I'm not going to tell you where I am. Maybe you've just got no clear budget. If you haven't got a clear budget of what money comes in and what money goes out and where you put your money, where you spend it, then you could probably improve your stewardship of money. One, if you're unable to say what your true bank balance is, when I say true, because I don't just mean, you know, look up on your phone and you've got a number and it tells you. It's, you know, when you factor in that you might have a bill going out tomorrow or something. And you don't have to know that off the top of your head. It may be you need to go away and do some research, but if you come back in an hour, you could tell me. If you don't know, if you couldn't figure that out, then maybe you could improve your stewardship. I know I'm setting the bar high here, but I'm doing signs that you can improve. So essentially I'm setting the bar at perfection, aren't I? We can all improve. Maybe you're regularly going overdrawn. I've got a whole other page yet, so don't worry. If the way your finances work is that you regularly go overdrawn and that's an unsurprising thing, it's a normal thing, then you can improve, you could do better. Maybe credit card loans are going up. Are you living, I'm not saying that, you know, never have credit cards. Sometimes they're good, sometimes they're even necessary, but is what you owe increasing or is it decreasing? Do you have an agreed kind of timeline and plan in order to pay back what you have taken from your credit card? Maybe living on next month's money. Are you living on money you already have or the money you will get? It's a tricky one, isn't it? If you're kind of moving from one to the other. If you're living on next month's money, then that's not ideal. Maybe you're living on a credit card. What about this one? This one is a killer. Payday feels good. If you are budgeting well, then payday should just be a neutral day, shouldn't it? In theory. It's just a day that comes and goes, because it doesn't matter when the money goes in and when it goes out. You know how much you've got to spend. That's a tricky one. But we could all be stewarding our money better, I think, if that is a relief. We shouldn't really notice. Another one, wealthy, but no idea really of income and expenditure. So, you know that you've got more coming in than you've got going out, but you don't really know what's going out. You just know you'll be fine at the end of the day. And you just kind of like, no, it's fine. That's not perfect stewardship of money. Another one, you wouldn't want a friend to see your bank statement. If you had to sit down with any one of your friends and show them what your money was being spent on, which is, I mean, I get it, that one is intrinsically embarrassing for English people, isn't it? What your bank statement says. But if there was stuff that you didn't want them to see particularly, or don't see that I've spent that much money on that, then maybe you could approve. I don't know why that should be the case. Maybe even that would be the case with your spouse if they saw what you were spending your money on. And you could improve your stewardship of it. And then lastly, not a generous giver. If you are not giving your money generously as a believer, as a Christian, as a member of a local church, then it's a sign that you can improve your stewardship. God has given you everything and he has been so generous to us. He wants us to be generous. We're not masters of it. We're not mastered by it, but we are managers of it. It is all his anyway. I'm sure we have all found ourselves somewhere. It's not about guilt. It's not about growing. It's not about a sin. It is about growing. It is a journey, isn't it? We're not going to kind of just nail it overnight. It's a journey of learning. And God wants for all of us, and I want for all of us, to be free of fear, doesn't he? Walking in faith and using the resources that God has entrusted to us, using them to serve him and to serve others. I think it is clear that God would have us be all to be generous givers. If we're to be good managers of the things that God has entrusted to us, then we need to be generous with them. And certainly generous with our money. Probably the primary way, I think, that we show God, we recognize that we are managers of our resources, you know, not masters, it's not ours. The primary way we recognize that is by giving a proportion of our money back to him through the church. In giving to the church, we're giving directly to God. I'm not preaching for my salary here. I'm really not. Anything else? I'm not preaching for anything else other than your heart. I really am. Give your heart to God. Give it to him generously. And it's already his anyway. And it will bless you richly. I'm not saying you'll get it all back, you know, tenfold, but it will bless you. And there is a faith step, like I said, for every one of us that we can take in the area of giving. So let's apply it in this way. Then we talked about this diagram. Let's explain this a bit more. This diagram that we have in the What's On is something that is, I think I've just found to be really helpful. Feel free to grab it out if you want to. It's kind of challenging me to be generous in my stewardship and helping to see where I am and where I can get to. The reason that this diagram is shown as a plant is because giving is, you know, a growing and dynamic and changing thing. No one can say they've reached the pinnacle of the plant. No one has absolutely nailed stewardship or giving. Everyone has room for growth, or certainly at least room for reassessment, do you know what I mean? And thinking about, well, where am I now? And you may be in a very different place to someone you're sitting next to, and that's fine. That's absolutely fine. We're all in a different place as we find ourselves, but we can all move up the plant. We can all take and make a step of faith. You'll notice on the sheet that there are tick boxes. We're asking everyone in Grace Church across our sites to prayerfully consider if they could tick any of these boxes. Like I said, we're not collecting these back at any point. They're just for your personal reflections. Two questions on there. Where is your current level of giving on this diagram, and what faith step could you take in the area of your giving? Let me encourage you to either to fill one of them in today, you know, here this morning, or more likely, as I would have to do, certainly, to take it home, talk it over with your husband or wife, and think about what you can do. You know, put it somewhere you can't miss it when you get home. Put it on the fridge or something, somewhere that's going to annoy you a lot. Put it, if you've got a tidy desk, put it on your tidy desk, and so, you know, it annoys you, and you can't tidy your desk until you've addressed it. So where are you then? It may be that you are currently a non-giver, and therefore you're not on the plant. Here's a stat for you. Nearly 25% of Grace Church members did not give any money in any identifiable way last year. So I know there are some members of Grace Church who are not on the plant yet, let alone non-members. I don't know who you are, by the way. I don't look at that stuff. But you can make a huge faith step this morning by stepping in and making a start today. I think this is probably the biggest leap of faith on the whole plant, is to kind of get on the plant. Going from never giving to giving something is a huge step. It's a huge opportunity as well for growth and development in your faithfulness. Could you tick that first box and then commit to yourself of making a first-time gift? Or maybe you have given before and you give every so often when you feel led or at gift days or whatever it is. Could you step up and give more regularly? Is that the faith step for you this morning? Maybe add into your budget to do it every month and steward your money in that way. Move to a place of regularly worshipping and thanking God through giving back to him what he's blessed you with. The faith step for you would be to set up a standing order, something like that, to give regularly. There are others who give regularly every month or every week, but proportionally, they're not giving 10% of their first fruit income. Certainly no one knows who these people are. Is God calling you to go that bit further and to give 10% regularly? It might be that this would require a bit of work with the whole area of your finances. You might need to scrap your existing budget if you have one and start again and start by putting in that 10% and then working around the rest of it from there. It might take some work. Certainly it requires faith in God. Again, I'm talking really to Christians here, mainly members of Grace Church. But whoever you are, even if you're not a Christian, maybe, then I'm kind of challenging people. Why don't you give this a go? I challenge you to do this. Set up a standing order and give regularly to your local months, three local church for 3 months or maybe 6 months. See what God does in your life. It'll be an amazing experiment, I think. See how blessed you are and what it does to your heart. Or you might be doing that and God could be calling you to go to the next step and to give over and above, to give sacrificially in a new way. God has given us everything we have. And like I say, it's not like if you're in that category already, you've nailed it already. God didn't even spare his own son in giving to us all things. He has held nothing back from blessing us. There's no limit to what God is worthy of. And he calls us to display our gratitude to him in the way that we give of our money. Maybe you could step up to this level today and start a new level of adventure with God as you give sacrificially and maybe even in a slightly risky way. The New Testament calls us to this level of giving. We should be aiming to get there eventually, but it may not be our step today. Maybe you are there already. Let me encourage you to even just at least review your giving. Where are you at? You know, am I doing this? Am I doing as much as I want to be doing? See if God is speaking to you in that area. It's a dynamic plant. No one has arrived. Taking any one of these faith steps requires a huge paradigm shift. It requires spirit-filled faith. And the faith step will be different for everyone, but we can all grow in the area of giving. Like we saw earlier as well, we can all improve in the stewardship of all of our resources and our money, and we can improve in generosity too. Let's all go on this faith journey together. Let's do it, you know, together as a church. Do what we can to step up and enter into a new level of blessing and relationship. You know, God isn't looking for kingdom fundraisers. He doesn't need your money. He doesn't need your funds. He gave them to us in the first place. He could take them back at any point at the end of the day if he wanted to. He could take them. But he's looking for our hearts. He's looking for disciples who grow in maturity and stewardship and love for him. And just as you kind of let that diagram sink in, as we consider where we are, what we could do, I want to talk about a bit about this. You might have heard of this before. I want to talk how to help you to kind of make the step. You might have seen this before in a professional training, but I think it might help us as we think in these terms, talking about will, skill, or focus. It's the idea that if you want someone to grow or develop in a certain area, you first need to identify what it is that's holding them back from growing. So if you've got someone, you're training to play golf or something, and you're training them at a high level, they aren't making as much progress as maybe they should be, you need to figure out what it is that's holding them back before you can address it. So if it's will, you know, are they just not that bothered? Then you can spend all your time focusing on the technique of a swing, but if they don't care, they're not going to make the progress you need to do. But likewise, if it's if it is skill, if they need some training, then you can kind of envision them and inspire them as much as you want, but they already want to do it. They've got the will. They just need to learn some skills. They need to learn to putt better or whatever it is. You know what I mean? You get the idea. Now, if there is anything that is holding you back from developing in your stewardship or taking a faith step in your giving, which is part of developing in stewardship, then it might help you to identify what it is that's holding you back before you can address it. So I'm going to look at these. I'm going to do it in a slightly different order. I'm going to start with skill. It may be that the main thing that's holding you back from improving in your stewardship and in giving generously is you don't really know how. You want to do it, you got the will, but you don't know how on earth to make a budget. Where do you start in making a budget? How you can set up a standing order or how to transfer some money or whatever it is. Then it's training that you need, isn't it? Come and talk to someone. If you want to, but you just don't know how to improve in your stewardship, we'd love to help you. Don't let this hold you back from growing and taking faith steps if you want to. And to say as well, we're going to be running a life skills course at our Bognor site in the autumn, which is a course, look it up and if you want some more details. But this is the kind of thing that will really help you to learn how to do those things, and you can get involved and you can go and be part of that course. Get the training you need if you have the will, but you just don't know how to do it. It might be a matter of focus. You might know how to do the things you want to do, and you might actually want to do them. You want to grow in giving or the stewardship of your money or anything else, but you just can't focus, you know, you can't get yourself round to doing it. I mean, at the end of the day, this is just a matter of obedience. Just get on with it. Just do it. Just go and do it. For those in this camp, let me say this. Praise the living God for the gift of standing orders that make life much easier. And the gift of rotas. They are a gift to us that help us to get in, to focus into things. They help us to commit to doing things. They take out the emotional drive that leads us to give in a healthy way, actually, so that we're not just given based on what we're feeling like on any given day, but we have committed to give something. And so we know we've made a conscious decision to do it. And the same with rotas. You kind of committed to it. I made this conscious decision. It's easy. I don't need to see how I feel on the day because I've committed to it. Or maybe it's a matter of will. And this is the big one, really. This is the one for all of us. It's ultimately all about this. Because if we truly have this in place, then we will motivate ourselves to get the skill or to get the focus we need to take a faith step. It's all about, like I said, it is all about our hearts. It is what stirs your heart. Is your heart stirred to honour God by stewarding your resources well and to give generously to him? It is your heart that God is after. He wants our hearts and our desires. And as we talk about our hearts and this, I'm going to close with this. I heard this recently and it helped me personally a great deal. If what we think we have, if how rich we think we are, how privileged we think we are, how blessed we think we have been, if that's this much, but what we think we deserve, what we think we should have, is that much, is way more. We think we deserve everything we have. In fact, we deserve way more than we have. Then that gap leads to incessant grumbling, really. We'll be grumpy. We will be utterly discontent. However, if what we think we have is this much, if we think we are rich and privileged and blessed beyond all measure, and what we think we deserve is down here, we think, you know, if we think we have way more than we actually deserve, then that gap leads to total and utter gratitude. The reality is that the things that God has entrusted to us and given to us, they're way beyond what we deserve. We don't really deserve anything. All we've done is turn our backs on God. No one has ever given to God that God should repay him. God owes us nothing. But despite us deserving so little, God has given to each one of us so richly. He's given you all your money, your house, your possessions, your family, your church, your skills even. It's all a gift from God. And we're only really, we're house sitters of all that stuff. It's all his, really. But he has entrusted it to us out of his grace. And more than any of that, ultimately, God hasn't even spared his son in what he has given to us. His own son was given to die for us, which means we now have an inheritance within him that we can't even imagine. That is how much God cares for us and loves us. If the thing holding us back is the will, and that is holding us all back to some extent, isn't it? Then we just need to understand and appreciate all that God has lovingly and graciously given to us, given to our hearts, and our hearts will be drawn to him. We love and we give because God first loved us and gave to us his son. So let's come to a place of gratitude this morning. We're gonna worship. So the band could come up. We're gonna worship him for what he has given us. Why don't we all stand together as well? Just stand as we come to a place of worship and gratitude. It's not about, you know, thinking, oh man, I'm rubbish, I don't deserve anything, but it is, wow, God, you have blessed me so richly compared to what I deserve. It is out of this place of gratitude and love and worship that we will give. So just as the band start playing, feel free to start playing, Natty, that'd be great. We're going to take a minute. We'll sing in a moment, but I just want to take a minute. Why don't you grab this sheet out, if you've got one, you know, if you've got your sheet, and just have a look. Just have a think. What's faith step you could do? Being mindful of all the stuff that God has given to you and entrusted to you. And as the music plays, focus on two things. Firstly, let's think of the abundance that God has given to us. And then secondly, what faith step can I make as part of a worshipful response to give back to him what is already his anyway? He's not looking for fundraisers. He is looking for disciples who love him and worship him. So we're just going to spend a minute or so just before God. And it's not, not for anyone else, it's just for you and your reflection. Just be mindful of what, firstly, what God has given to you, and then secondly, what faith step could you take to give back to him. Just going to be silent for a moment or so. Spare his own son, but gave him up for us all. How will he not also, along with him, graciously give us all things? God, thank you. We don't need to worry. We don't need to worry about what we have or what we don't have. You didn't even spare your son. How will you not graciously give us all things? Thank you. There's no end to your resources and there's no end to your wealth. You speak and things come into being. You don't need any of our stuff, but you long for our hearts because you long for a relationship. I do pray, stir us, Lord. Stir us. Stir our hearts to want to glorify you, to want to worship you, to want to honor you in new ways, to take faith steps that we've never taken before, to go on a new level of adventure in worshiping you out of a place of gratitude and love. Stir our hearts, Lord, for your glory, for your kingdom.